Hi, this is Dr. Christopher Perrin, and welcome to this episode of The Christopher Perrin Show. Thank you once again for watching or listening. I've been talking about some pedagogical principles. I think it's important to learn principles of teaching, even more important to learn principles and to learn various techniques. Techniques do need to be used by teachers, and they will be employed and they will come and go depending on the time, the place, the situation, the age of students, the subject that's being taught, etc. We need techniques kind of like we need a toolbox, but we need even more importantly principles that help us to know when to pull or reach for a certain tool and how to use that tool. So I think principles are even more important. They're fundamental. The word principle means first. These are the first things that must be mastered if you're going to be a great teacher. So I first looked at the principle of festina lente. Festina lente is Latin for make haste slowly. Any teacher will learn eventually that it's important to take the time necessary to actually teach a student to mastery. In other words, rather than just covering material that students will soon forget, we must teach so that students actually permanently learn. How do we do that? This particular principle, multum non multa, that I'm addressing in this episode, is a sister concept that's very closely related to festina lente, and sometimes they can even get confused. But multum non multa in Latin means much, not many. Just as we want to teach to mastery, we also want to make sure that we don't try to teach too much, because if we do, we will spoil learning. We can flood students with too much learning, too many facts to master, too many ideas to try to understand at once. We can spoil learning. And as we'll see, according to C.S. Lewis, we can even harm the standards a student will have in the future for what learning is. He thinks possibly even for life. So we'll look at these principles. The next principle that I hope to address will be repetitio mater memoriae, which is repetition is the mother of memory, which is also closely related to both festina lente and multum non multa. But here we are, looking at the pedagogical principle of going deep or digging deep wells with our students. So I did recently reflect on the maxim festina lente. Make haste slowly, master each step. And now we're going to look at multum non multa, much, not many. In pedagogical terms, this maxim means digging deep wells with our students. Rather than superficially skimming the surface of content that students will soon forget and seldom love. A good classical teacher will not only proceed carefully to ensure mastery of each concept or skill that's taught, he will also be selective and only teach what is necessary for the student to learn well. Why is this? It's because the wise teacher understands the humanity of the child that's before him and understands the limits of that child's ability to learn, deeply understand, and remember. He knows that if he tries to teach too much content, he may overwhelm the mind of the student or distract him from mastering what he must learn now that he might learn even more later. Put another way, he knows that only so much content can be absorbed and mastered in a given span of time for the particular kind of student that is before him. In other words, this teacher has wisely and correctly assessed the circumstances that's before him, the humanity of the child that's before him, the constraints of time and space, and the nature of the subject that's being taught. He knows how to order learning properly according to the student before him and the art that's being taught. For example, a teacher of fourth graders will teach a different quantity of content than a teacher of 10th graders, because humans at those different ages vary in terms of what they can learn and how much they can learn and how fast. Any good teacher will be conscious of the curse of knowledge that afflicts him as a teacher and will fight it off. Do you know what this curse of knowledge is? This is when you know something so well from past learning that you forget what it's like to actually learn it. This curse afflicts most of us. We forget what it means to learn an art as a neophyte, as a beginner. We forget what it means to learn as a child. As a result, we project the ability to learn a concept into a child's mind, usually a concept that we know so well that we can't even remember learning it ourselves. As a result, we often teach more content than a student can manage and master, and we often teach it at a level that's beyond their reach. Does that sound familiar? If you're a teacher, have you found yourself doing that from time to time? Can you recall being a student when you perhaps suspect the teacher was afflicted by this curse of knowledge and teaching above your level and ability to comprehend? If we're teaching, say, Latin to fourth graders the way we learned it in college, we've fallen prey to this curse. If we expect our high school students to read a novel a week like we did in college, we are under the curse. Although I think a novel a week even in college is a curse too. I cite as an example of someone who fought off this curse a great teacher of science, John Mays. He's the developer of the Novare science curriculum, which I highly recommend. He discovered that many large science textbook companies produced science texts that contained twice as much content as the average student could learn in a year. Perhaps you remember the 1,100-page physics or chemistry text that you had in high school. Well, following the dictum of multum non multa, John Mays selected what he considered to be the essential content in physics, chemistry, and biology that a high school student actually could master in a year and even enjoy. As a result, his books are about 400 pages long and beautiful, and students are usually delighted to study a book they believe they can actually understand and master. Maybe I can get through this chemistry book or biology book. And it looks beautiful. It's inviting. I don't know what your experience was, but I can remember getting some of those large, hefty textbooks and thinking, I'm not going to be able to get through this. How can I learn biology? It's beyond me, as a high school student. Now, there's the 5%, 10%, the minority of students who will do well even with an 1,100-page biology text. But I wasn't one of them. John of Salisbury in his Metalogicon in Book 1 describes the teaching methods of Bernard of Chartres. He's describing a great teacher. And here's what he says about Bernard. At the same time, he said that we should shun what is superfluous. According to him, the works of distinguished authors suffice. As a matter of fact, to study everything that everyone, no matter how insignificant, has ever said is either to be excessively humble and cautious or overly vain and ostentatious. It also deters and stifles minds that would be better freed to go on to do other things. That which preempts the place of something that is better is for this reason disadvantageous and does not deserve to be called good. The ancients correctly reckoned that to ignore certain things constituted one of the marks of a good grammarian or teacher. So here is John of Salisbury said that Bernard thought that if you tried to teach too much, if you taught some good books and ignored the great books, you really can't call those good books good anymore because they're displacing something that was better. Yes, there is something in education like too much of a good thing. And we have to be careful not to teach too many good things and then lose what is best. Multum non multa. What must we do then as teachers to heed multum non multa? Ignore certain things. We must do what poets do. Kill our darlings. You may teach world literature and you may love Dostoevsky. Of course you must teach Crime and Punishment, but also, of course, the Brothers Karamazov, naturally. And who can exclude The Idiot? And there's some short stories. Can't exclude any of those. Well, you know how this goes. No, you cannot do this to high school students. If we overwhelm the students with too much of a good thing, even good things that are written by Dostoevsky, we will do more harm than good and even ruin their taste for something beautiful. How will you get to love the Brothers Karamazov if you have to read so much Dostoevsky in so short a period of time? Following John of Salisbury, we will deter and stifle the minds of our students if we do this. C.S. Lewis speaks to the same issue, arguing that in our schools we should teach fewer subjects and teach them far better. You might say, far deeper. In his autobiography, Surprised by Joy, he writes this, speaking about his own time in school, probably at about junior high age. In those days, a boy on the classical side officially did almost nothing but classics. I think this was wise. The greatest service we can do to education today is to teach fewer subjects. No one has time to do more than a very few things well before he is 20. And when we force a boy to be a mediocrity in a dozen subjects, we destroy his standards, perhaps for life. Smugi, his teacher. Smugi taught us Latin and Greek, but everything else came in incidentally. Boy, I'm not one who wants to be on the other side of an argument opposing C.S. Lewis. Here Lewis notes that by trying to teach too much, we risk destroying the standards of a student, perhaps for life. Teaching too much content and too many courses at a time actually impedes learning, reducing the chances that students will taste and see the beauty of Dostoevsky, Augustine, algebra, physics, or Mozart. There is such a thing as too much of a good thing, and there is such a thing as a teacher who tries to teach too much. Could that be you? Notice well that Lewis makes reference to the human limitation of time. We only have so much of it. Multum non multo reflects a prudent understanding of the reality of living in time and using it wisely by being selective and choosing the best things among many good things, but letting some of those, many of those good things go, at least for the time. It echoes, therefore, the wise way that Christ addresses Martha in Luke 10. Martha was busy in the kitchen while her sister Mary was sitting with Christ in meaningful conversation. And Martha, seeing this, confronts not her sister, but Christ himself and says, "Don't you care for me? Tell my sister to help me." And he responds, "Martha, Martha, you are busy about many things. Mary has chosen the better part, and it won't be taken from her." And there the episode closes with no more commentary. We're left just reflecting on this. That word busy can be translated anxious. Martha, Martha, you are anxious about many things. But Mary has chosen, and some translations say, the best part, and it won't be taken from her. Why would we take the better or the best part from our students? Well, because we're under the curse of knowledge, because we love these good things and we want to give as many of them as we can to our students, even if we have to stuff them. We must refrain from this. It's natural that we would be attracted to doing this, but we must be prudent and refrain. A good teacher will naturally be a busy teacher. We can be Martha-like, we can be busy about things, but we ought not to be anxious or too busy. And we ought to know where our priorities lie. A good teacher will know when to choose the best things for her students and push aside the superfluous good and ignore certain things that she knows and even loves and offer only what is best for the student before her, given the time allotted. The irony is this: it's only when we teach less that a student can learn more. And more often means with more depth, understanding, and love. The further irony is that if a student comes to love one thing deeply, by going deep. She often is inspired to continue, even on her own time, on Saturday morning or Saturday night. If she reads Crime and Punishment deeply with guidance and relish, she's much more likely to begin reading The Brothers Karamazov on the weekend. Help her to savor Macbeth, and she will turn to King Lear on vacation. Help her to fully comprehend Euclid's first proposition, and she will come to class having mastered the second one on her own. Yes, it's true. This is at the heart of the maxim. We often go farther, faster, by slowing down and going deep. Thank you for listening or watching to this episode of The Christopher Perrin Show. Stay tuned for, in a week or two, when I will come back to address another pedagogical principle, which I think will be repetitio mater memoriae. Repetition is the mother of memory. Thanks again for viewing or watching or listening. I'd like to thank you for watching or listening to The Christopher Perrin Show. And to do that, I can give you a coupon code that will give you 10% off on anything that you might care to order at classicalacademicpress.com. And the coupon code is simply CPSHOW. Thanks again for listening or watching.